We continue now with the current installment of the tale of Mordechai HaTzadik, how he sought out his two friends, the Chaim and Rabbi Socher Ber, in order to introduce them to Teres HaBaal Shem Tov, to the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, as well as to the Baal Shem Tov himself, so they too could derive benefit from this great luminary. You will recall that previously we had related how the Mordechai had overcome his difficult decision of having to leave the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov wished him well in his journey and told him not to rush but to take his time, because there's much to be accomplished in the journey itself, and also that there were certain things that he was supposed to tell both Reb Chaim as well as Rabbi Socher Ber when he would reach them. He had sought out a young man who seemed to be a son of his friend Reb Chaim. He wasn't sure, and he's going on looking both for Rabbi Socher Ber as well as Reb Chaim. Reb Mordechai departed Kochino for Lubavitch to look for Rabbi Socher Ber. On the road, he met up with various other individuals who were traveling by foot, as he was, and many of them were kapsonim, they were beggars. As they were all walking along the same road together, Reb Mordechai noticed that amongst all the beggars, there was one who seemed to be particularly unfortunate. His clothing was in tatters, he spoke to no one at all, and he carried a large sack on his shoulder. And this beggar, who seemed to have caught Reb Mordechai's eye, as he was walking along, he was constantly moving with his lips, as though he was whispering something. The group of travelers arrived at an inn just as it was time for Mincha, to daven Mincha. And at that time, suddenly this beggar, who Reb Mordechai was looking at, suddenly disappeared, and Reb Mordechai never saw him again. This struck Reb Mordechai as extremely mysterious, and he regretted not having spoken with this individual and found out who he was and where he came from. Who knows? Maybe this was one of the Baal Shem Tov's secret associates who went on the road incognito and fulfilled various missions for the Baal Shem Tov, as was customary at that time. For a while at the Baal Shem Tov's court, Reb Mordechai had become aware that the Baal Shem Tov had chaverim, he had companions from the old days before he had revealed himself as the Baal Shem Tov. And these associates of the Baal Shem Tov were tzaddikim nestorim, hidden tzaddikim, and they would travel around the countryside dressed as simple folk, and sometimes they even disguised themselves as beggars, and they would wander from place to place. Not only these previous individuals would travel incognito, but the Baal Shem Tov also instructed some of his own Talmidim, who became his Talmidim after he revealed himself, that they too become Tzaddikim Nestorim, hidden Tzaddikim, and he entrusted them as well with various missions, especially in the villages, the rural settlements, and the inns, all these places the Baal Shem Tov would send these hidden Tzaddikim. Mordechai also was aware that it was the Baal Shem Tov's opinion that Jews ought to live in small villages, in rural settlements, or have inns on the wayside and by the crossroads, and they should earn their living through agricultural pursuits and other rural occupations, such as leasing inns, to lease water mills, or windmills, and orchards, and farming, all these things which were available to Jews if we would leave the city where it was very, very difficult to make a living for the Jewish people, and there are much more opportunities, at least materially, in these small villages and rural settlements. And in fact, the Baal Shem Tov put hundreds and hundreds of Jewish families to work in such businesses. And as to their spiritual needs, the Baal Shem Tov took this upon his shoulders as well, sending some of his Talmidim to these villages and to these simple country folk, that these Talmidim of his, of the Baal Shem Tov's Talmidim, that they serve as Shoichtim, as ritual slaughterers, and as Malamdim, as teachers for the children of the villagers. The Baal Shem Tov also maintained a special tzedakah fund, a special charity fund that he called the Pidyon Shvuyim Fund, a fund for the redeeming of captives. And this fund was used to aid the tenant farmers and the innkeepers who were unable to pay their rent, and as was the custom in those times, if they couldn't pay their rent, then the serfs, the landowners, would throw the innkeeper or the farmer together with the entire family into a dungeon where they would languish for many, many years and sometimes for the rest of their lives. Baal Shem Tov was known for the following quotation. Baal Shem Tov said that, "I especially love the Anoshim Pshutim, the simple Jews. And the simple, unpretentious Jew is our greatest treasure. It is written to Baal Shem Tov on to say, 'Kisiu atem li eretz chefetz.' You will be a treasured land for me, says Hashem, says the Almighty. And just as even the wisest of men can never fully comprehend how much vast wealth there is that Hashem put within the earth, for everything originates from the soil, and gold, diamonds, and precious metals, as well as copper, aluminum, and all these treasures are found within the earth, but they are concealed, and one has to dig in order to find it. So too, no one can ever fully comprehend the immense treasure hidden within the Jews, who are Eretz Chefetz, God's treasured land." And the Baal Shem Tov went on to say that, "I will do my utmost, I will do my best to see to it that these Jews produce the fruit that God's treasured land," meaning that these Jews are capable of yielding. And indeed, it was the Baal Shem Tov who brought about the latent qualities and talents of all Jews, even Anoshim Pshutim, by revealing and displaying to them and for all the depth of pneumius, of holiness, and of sanctity that resided even within the most simple Jew. That Mordechai was convinced that this mysterious beggar was one of the Rebbe's shluchim, one of the Rebbe's agents, one of the Baal Shem Tov's emissaries. And he was deeply distressed over having lost the opportunity to be able to speak with him and engage him in conversation and find out more about him. When Rav Mordechai finally arrived in Orsha, he learned that there were two routes by which one could travel to Lubavitch, where he was hoping to find Rabbi Socher Ber. Either one, he could go by way of Babinovich, or he could go by way of Dubrovna. And he decided to travel through Dubrovna on the chance that the Yeshiva Bocher's father, who lived there, might be his long-lost companion, Reb Chaim, who, as you'll recall, this Yeshiva Bocher reminded him so much of by his mannerisms and by his speech and by his looks. Upon arriving in Dubrovna, Reb Mordechai followed his habit of going immediately to the Beis HaMedrash. Coming there, he found a large number of people, both middle-aged and elderly, who were sitting and learning Torah. And he began asking around about Reb Chaim HaSasner. However, none of those present had any idea who this Reb Chaim HaSasner may be. A few hours later, as Mincha time approached, more and more people began to come to the Beis HaMedrash, and among them was also the shamus of the Beis HaMedrash. Reb Mordechai continued asking everybody who he would meet about Reb Chaim Sassner, who had a son who was studying in the Kochanova Yeshiva, and who was, according to the son's account, a storekeeper. but his wife actually ran the store, while Rab Chaim sat in the Beis HaMedrash, constantly sitting and learning. Upon hearing all of these clues to Rab Chaim's identity, the Shamas concluded that this must be our Rab Chaim Porush, who had been known as Rab Chaim El Sassner when he first arrived in Dubrovna many years earlier. And he advised Rab Mordechai, if you want to see this individual and find out for sure whether this is indeed your friend Rab Chaim, go to the Kavronim Shul, to the Gravedigger Shul, where it was customary at that time that many guilds and people who had a certain type of labor, like tailors, cobblers, and the like, would have their own synagogue, and go to the Kavronim Shul, and there you will find this Rab Chaim. Rab Mordechai took up his belongings and made his way to the Kavronim Shul, which was at the end of the Kaltergasse, that was known, the Coal Street, close by the cemetery. When he arrived at the shul, the people there had already davened mincha, and there were many individuals there, some of them elderly individuals. When Rav Mordechai inquired once again about Rav Chaim Porush, they pointed to a Jew who was still in the middle of his mincha davening in a side room. When Rav Mordechai began observing Rav Chaim Porush closely, he was unable to get a good look at his face, for the Porush was in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei and stood completely bent over and covered his face with his hand. However, his external appearance, his lean build, his stoop posture, the way his demeanor was, it suggested a person much older than his friend Rab Chaim would be. He was sure that this Rab Chaim Sassner, as the Kochan of Yeshiva Bochret called him, who was now known as Rab Chaim Porush, really was not his companion Rab Chaim Azirel, and he felt he had wasted his time by passing through Dubrovna on his way from Orsha to Lubavitch. The Mordechai stood there, and he watched and listened as the Porush davened and beat his chest while saying the Alchet, the confessional prayers, during this ordinary weekday Minchash ministry. The Mordechai's lengthy stay at the Baal Shem Tov's house of study and learning and hearing the teachings of the Holy Baal Shem Tov and observing his system of Avedas Hashem, of his system of divine service, of serving God through Torah study, and davening, had banished his, Rav Mordechai's, former melancholy disposition and his haughty mannerisms, that all the previous ways of sadness and gaiva which he had taken with him in his previous life before being a chosid had disappeared. And now, as Rav Mordechai observed the Porush as he was praying, he recalled how he himself had looked before becoming a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov. He thought to himself, poor, poor Porush, how unfortunate this individual was. His intentions were, of course, good. He meant well. But his actions were undesirable. And his ways, his derech, was not the true derech Hashem, was not the correct way. For one must serve Hashem with joy. Ivdus Hashem b'simcha, bayu lefonov b'nona, come before Him with rejoicing, and with gladness, and with happiness. If a person realizes how great Hashem is and contemplates the fact that such an insignificant creature, such as a human being, is given the opportunity to serve Hashem, this realization itself should eliminate any type of gaiva, any arrogance and haughtiness, and instill him rather with the characteristics of kindness and another humility, and true avos Yisrael, a true love for a fellow Jew. And as the Baal Shem Tov was often known to say, and as he had heard in that Torah himself from the Baal Shem Tov, that one must have Mesiras Nefesh, true self-sacrifice, to do a favor for even a single Jew. And this is true begashmius in material matters, and especially beruchnius, especially so in spiritual things. And Mordechai was sure that this poor Porush had no idea of the true greatness of the Creator, nor the meaning of Ma Godlu Masecha Hashem and Ma Rabu Masecha Hashem, how great are your works, Hashem, and how numerous are they. The Porush had no ability and no true insight, not only not into Hashem, but even into the wondrous things that He created. And he certainly knew nothing about simcha shel mitzvah, about the delight that accompanies the performance of a mitzvah, or about the pleasure that can be derived and that should be derived from doing a favor for a fellow Jew. And as Rav Mordechai reflected upon the life of the Porush, Rav Mordechai's whole life story also passed through his own mind. And he began to recall how he established himself in the trade and worked, but still allowed himself a lot of time for Torah study. And he studied Gemara, Poskim, he studied Talmud, the Halachic codes, Zohar, the basic fundamental book of Jewish mysticism, and Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism. And Mordechai believed that his spiritual qualities were on the highest level, and imagined himself to be the greatest Talmud Chochem and Tzaddik of that generation, the Godel Adur and the Tzaddik Adur, the greatest Torah scholar and Tzaddik of that generation. He was also gratified that no one else was aware of this. This enabled him to not only be such a great Talmud Chochem and Tzaddik, he thought to himself, but he can now also fulfill the mitzvah of Anova, fulfill the mitzvah, the commandment of being humble. Rav Mordechai used to think to himself that if people only knew who this construction worker really was, and if they only knew about the immensity of his Torah knowledge, both in Nigla and Kabbalah, both in the revealed and the mystical aspects of Torah, they would never be able to fulfill their obligation of giving him true Kavod HaTorah, the honor which is due to such a Torah scholar. And he thanked Hashem for bestowing upon him the privilege of observing the mitzvah of Anova, the mitzvah of being humble, for to be so great a person, he thought of himself, and yet not to let anyone beware of it. This was the height and the epitome of Anova, the height of humility. Rav Mordechai further recalled his happiness and joy on one particular occasion. It was a summer Shabbos in Parshas Bahaloyscha. At that time, Rav Mordechai was already conducting himself al pi Kabbalah in accordance with the teachings and the directives of Jewish mysticism. On Friday, he would go to the mikveh, where he would reflect on the mystical meaning of tefillah. In fact, not only would he think about kavonas hamikveh al pi Kabbalah, the intentions of mikveh according to Jewish mysticism, but everything which he did, when he would eat, drink, and other mundane activities, this was accompanied by his understanding, as he had of that time, of the divine names and the unification of the divine names, as is revealed in the writings of the Arizal, in the Kisvei HaAri, where he speaks about the Yichud HaShemes, the divine intentions and unifications. On Shabbos mornings, the Mordechai would not go to the mikveh. And despite the fact that he really ought to have done so, because both halachically as well as al pi Kabbalah he was then obligated to go to the mikveh, nevertheless, his understanding of the revealed aspects of Torah led him to conclude that this extra zehirus, this extra precaution against a possible transgression of the Torah Shabbos laws by going to the mikveh should override the actual tefillas mitzvah, the purification of going Shabbos in the mikveh. Other than this, however, his conduct conformed entirely al pi kabbalah. And even while working, he would think about his Torah studies, and he would recite Mishnah and Gemara Baal Peh. He would recite it by heart. In his village, people knew him by the appellation as Rav Mordechai, the house painter. People were aware, of course, that he was a scholar, but nobody knew that he was a Torah giant, a tzaddik, and a mikubal, a kabbalist. He even concealed this fact from his own wife as much as possible. And truth be told, Rav Mordechai thought about himself at that time that he was quite pleased and smug with himself. And then, at that time, before he became a chassid, deep in his heart, he even snickered at the elderly Goan, as the Goan was known of the Tzaddik HaDor, the Tzaddik of our generation, as the townspeople called Rabbeinu Shmeir. For the past 40 years, Rabbeinu Shmeir had avoided eating peas, even in the winter time, for fear that they might contain worms or maggots. He would eat cooked foods, bread and challah, only if they were prepared by women who were surely tar or surely ritually pure, in order to avoid any kind of impurity. But he, Rav Mordechai, thought about himself was an even greater goyim than the Rav, as demonstrated by the fact that the Rav had appeared visibly impressed when Rav Mordechai delivered two pilpulim, two lectures and two knowledge before him. And actually, out of great humility, Rav Mordechai told the Rav that he had heard these two pilpulim from someone else, in the name of one of the Torah giants of the previous generation. By doing so, Rav Mordechai had aimed to conceal his own greatness from others, because had they known this was his pilpul, surely they would have been so astounded that they couldn't have given him enough honor. And he wanted to hide himself, he wanted to be anonymous, and he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah to perfection of another of being humble. So he said he heard this from the name of some great goyim from a previous generation. The truth was, however, that he himself, he thought of himself, was a far greater goyim and tzaddik than the old Rav. And on that particular Shabbos, Parshas Baaloisa, he awoke at dawn, as he did every Shabbos, and went to the Beis HaMedrash to pray, to daven with the minyan, the daven Vasikin, the daven at sunrise. On that Shabbos, Rav Mordechai was called up to the Torah. At first, Rav Mordechai debated whether it was proper for him to accept the Aliyah without having previously immersed himself in the mikveh. Ordinarily, he would be honored with an aliyah only on a Monday or Thursday. For the villagers, innocently, were unaware of his true qualities. They knew that he was a Torah scholar, but they also knew him as a workman and a house painter. And so they thought it was enough if we give a person like that an aliyah on a Monday or Thursday. He was almost never called up to the Torah on Shabbos. And here, all of a sudden, he has an aliyah on Shabbos. He had no idea why he had been called up on this particular Shabbos. It was quite possible, Rav Mordechai thought to himself, that this came about because while hurrying to the Beis HaMedrash, the idea of receiving an aliyah had passed through his mind. And after all, it is God's habit that the Tzoyin Yirei of Yaseh, he fulfills the desires of those who fear him. And so, the Kutsha Berichu, the Holy One, put into the head of the Gabbai who distributed the Aliyahs, that he, Rav Mordechai, should receive an Aliyah and be called up to the Torah. Now that he had actually been called up, the Mordechai debated whether it was right for him to accept the Aliyah or not. For even according to strict Shulchan Aruch, according to the letter of the law, it is not entirely proper to go up to the Torah without prior immersion, especially when it is necessary. But it is especially inappropriate according to Kabbalah. Still, since they did in fact call him up, he had the Aliyah. This surely came about because Kodesh Brichu, the Holy One, must have decreed, thought Rav Chaim to himself, that it should be so that the Mordechai should have Aliyah. Now, Kodesh Brichu, the Holy One, the Almighty, certainly knew Rav Mordechai's qualities. While the people did not know it because he was such a great and humble individual and such an honor, but he couldn't hide his greatness from the Almighty. And therefore, if he would decline the Aliyah, Rav Mordechai thought to himself, he would cause the Holy One to suffer anguish, because the Holy One wants him to have an Aliyah. Kodesh Brichu knows how great Rav Chaim is. And if he doesn't take it, God is going to be very disappointed, thought Rav Mordechai. On the other hand, if he did go up to the Torah, the Holy One would derive much pleasure from having his way, that God was able to fulfill what he wanted to do. The fact that it would give the Holy One pleasure tipped the balance, and he decided, or did Rav Mordechai, to accept Aliyah, despite the fact that it was not entirely proper according to law, and contrary to the dictates of Kabbalah. The Aliyah for which Rav Mordechai was called up was Shvi. When the reader read the pasuk of Ish Moshe Onav Miyud Mikol Odom Asher Apnei Adama, and the man, Moshe, was exceedingly humble, more so than any other individual on the face of the earth. The notion came into Rav Mordechai's head that Moshe Rabbeinu's humility, his anova, was indeed awesomely great, but nevertheless not so great as his own, as Rav Mordechai's own anova. He, Rav Mordechai, was even humbler than Moshe Rabbeinu. Rav Mordechai now recalled what an idiot he had been in those days. After the davening, he was so delighted with the Aliyah he had received. In this Aliyah, he felt he had detected a divine message informing him that it was he who was the real master of humility. Moshe Rabbeinu was indeed a great master of humility. But after all, wasn't the entire Jewish nation aware of Moshe's greatness? Didn't Moshe Rabbeinu himself publicly disclose his own greatness by saying, by he be sure the Melech, and saying about himself, and there was a king in Yeshurun. Now, how great and how humble could that possibly be? In contrast, Rav Mordechai knew how great a Torah scholar, tzaddik, and mekubal he himself was. But not only didn't he tell anyone else, he actually took pains to conceal his greatness from others, unlike Moshe Rabbeinu, who didn't. Why? He kept it a secret even from his very own wife. To her, he was certainly permitted to disclose it, for she would have had much pleasure from learning of this, and it's a mitzvah to make one's wife happy. But he was afraid to trust her with such important information, for she might reveal it to others through a slip of the tongue. The Mordechai's theory, however, contained one small flaw. There was something wrong which he couldn't understand here. Why did Hashem say that Moshe Rabbeinu was exceedingly humble, more than any other person upon the face of the earth? After all, Kodesh Baruch Hu must have known that many generations later there would be a Rav Mordechai the painter, who would be a great scholar in both Nigla and Kabbalah, in both the revealed and mystical aspects of Torah, but who would also at the same time be so great a master of humility, they would keep his secret, his greatness in Torah. And the fact that he was such a great tzaddik, he would keep this greatness even from his own wife. By doing so, he truly fulfilled the mitzvah of being humble. So how could Kodesh Baruch Hu utter the phrase, more than any person upon the face of the earth? But after careful thought, he came upon a solution that might excuse and far emphasize the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the answer to this conundrum that Rav Moshe dreamt up at that time, as well as the next installment of the story, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, the next time around.